How's it going? My name is Inkenna, and I am responsible for everything that goes on here. Here being the A Nurse Named Ken podcast. This is season 3, episode 11. What's the name of today's episode? Today's episode is called It's Not For Everybody. At first, I said I wanted to call it Ain't For Everybody, but that double negative is really, it's getting to me. So consistent with this season's theme, we are still talking about travel nursing and, as the title implies, travel nursing is not for everybody. Hot take, don't throw tomatoes all at once. As always, diving right in, the market is very, very saturated right now. And this is coming from somebody who got into travel nursing a year into the pandemic when a lot of people said, oh, it's saturated, the money has dried up. But that second wave in the fall came and the money was really, really good. So now people said, you know, fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, can't get fooled again. So, you know, people jumped in. They said, I'm not going to miss this money two times in a row, three times in a row. I am going to jump on this wave. But now the government money has dried up. It's very, very difficult to find contracts. Yes, they're putting contracts out, but trying to find contracts that are competitive, once they're posted, they are gone the same day. And this is coming from somebody who had a contract in Baltimore that got canceled. And every day for about 1 to 2 weeks, it was like a week and a half. Every day during that time period, I was waking up at 7 a.m., writing down job codes, waiting until my recruiter was awake, because most of the time your recruiter is going to be on the West Coast for a lot of these agencies. So as soon as it was 8 o'clock their time, I was calling them, letting them know, hey, these are the jobs that I saw, submitting for them, calling them back by the end of the day. They would say, oh, 100 people submitted for this job. Same day, somebody scooped it up, and it was just a tough time to be looking for a job. Not something that I want to go back into. I know a lot of recruiters urged me, oh, with your current contract, try and stay with that for a while and just ride that out. But honestly, I don't want to stay at this hospital. Let's just be real. I don't want to stay at this hospital. And that's why I mentioned in a previous episode that I'm kind of leaning more towards per diem work rather than contract work. Just because there's so much uncertainty with the contract work, they can cancel it at any time. You can finish a contract, be looking for another one, and you might be out of work for 1, 2, 3 months. Gone are the days where you're about to finish a contract and you can scoop something up in 1 to 2 weeks. It's different times. The market is always changing. So again, it is very, very saturated. There's a lot of competition, and you just really have to be persistent. Another thing, be honest with yourself. I think a lot of people glamorized travel nursing, as with anything in nursing. People glamorized, oh, you're going to get the bag, and you know, you're going to go buy all these materialistic things, and you're going to make all this money, and you're going to retire from bedside nursing. And that may be true for some people. However, some people, that is not their reality. People went, spent money, lived well outside of their means, and now the money has dried up and they're looking like who done it and why. So be honest with yourself about what are your goals, one, but then also, am I ready to travel nurse? Because I'll tell you something, staff nursing, it sucks. Absolutely. You're mistreated, PTO denied, that's horrible. That's atrocious. But with travel nursing, let me tell you something. When they tell you in nursing school, be flexible, travel nursing is going to test your flexibility. You're going to be more flexible than an Olympic gymnast. So just rattling off a few things as they come to mind, you have to be comfortable with limited to no orientation. With this current contract, I got one shift on days for my orientation, and then I flipped to night shift, which, as we all know, anybody who's worked as a nurse, day shift and night shift have two different paces. Day shift, there are a lot more people walking around, a lot more people micromanaging. Some hospitals, that's when they do rounds, a lot more procedures taking place. Night shift, you have fewer resources, you have fewer people walking around. It's a little bit more chill. Not to say that nobody does anything on night shift. That's definitely not true. But they orient you on days so you can get the flow of things, but then night shift, oftentimes it's a little bit more relaxed. One day of orientation may not be enough for some people. You have to think of it as you are coming into a crisis situation, whether it says crisis contract or not. You're coming into a situation where they don't have enough people to run a well-oiled machine. So you're coming in and they're expecting you to be a resource. You're not a new graduate nurse. You're not a staff nurse. They are not there to coddle you and hold your hand. Little things like, oh, where can I find ChloraPrep? Or where, what's the code for the break room? Yes, absolutely. But holding your hand, oh, how do I place an NG tube? How do I program the kangaroo pump? They're not going to have the patience for that. So again, you need to be honest with yourself and really do some deep, deep, deep introspection and say, am I ready to go be a resource where they don't have resources? My current contract is critical care float pool. I was a little bit skeptical and hesitant about doing this. However, my previous contract in the Bay Area, the one before the Baltimore contract got canceled, that contract I was floating within the different ICUs. My home unit was a MICU, but I was able to float to other units and I had no difficulty, so I felt confident about this. And I haven't had any issues. I float to MICU, SICU, CCU, cardiothoracic ICU, and then I also float to med-surg. But this is something, if you don't feel comfortable, obviously they're not going to give you a fresh open heart. They have guidelines. You fill out these competencies, but don't lie on those competencies. If you have never taken care of a patient with a Swan-Ganz catheter, you should not be putting that you're proficient and you do this every single day. Again, this is not the time to be a superhero. You need to be honest with yourself. If you've never done it, there's no shame in the game. Say that you've never done it, because a lot of places will pull those competencies. They will pull your card quite literally and say, well, you did say that you were highly proficient with Swan-Ganz catheters. Lie detector determined that was a lie. Something else that I'm noticing with travel nursing is that a lot more places are pushing these contracts for 48 hours. And I have harped on about how I'm over 48-hour contracts, I'm over 60-hour contracts. After about a year and a half of doing this, it's enough. I would like to work 36 hours. And truthfully, since the beginning of my nursing career, I've only worked overtime. So working 36 hours would be, nothing would bring me more joy than to just work the bare minimum. 48 hours is a lot. Day shift, okay, you know, maybe not as bad as night shift, but in general, 48 hours, it's no joke. And then committing to that for 13 weeks. I've mentioned how the market is changing. Gone are the days of 4-week contracts, 8-week contracts. I mean, they're few and far between. Again, those are very, very good contracts, usually crisis contracts. They're here today, gone today as well. Not gone tomorrow, they're gone the same day. Because ideally, you want to be working something 4 or 8 weeks. Just tickle your taste buds and get on out of there, for me at least. So for 13 weeks to be working 48 hours, that is a major commitment. Another thing, block scheduling is becoming rare. I know early on in the pandemic, they were so happy to have any help and they would block out your days, whatever you wanted, they would give you. Now it's getting to the true meaning of crisis contracts or the true meaning of travel nursing. You are here to fill a need in their critical staffing schedule. So wherever they need you, that's where they're going to place you on the schedule, because again, you are there to be a resource. And I know it sounds harsh, but if you want preference in your scheduling, then you should consider staying a staff nurse. As I mentioned before, the whole travel nursing has been glamorized, and yes, there's so many perks, but also you have to realize that there are some downsides. There are quite a few downsides of this. If you listen to earlier episodes, I did highlight loneliness as a travel nurse. That is a major thing. But just to highlight a few other things, housing. I currently am in New York. If you know, you know. If you don't, housing in New York is atrocious. It is crazy expensive. It is hard to find anything right now. Everybody wants to live in New York in the summer. People leave in the cooler months. It's a treacherous time to be trying to find housing. A lot of places require you make 40 times the income where, you know, as a travel nurse, that should not be an issue. However, some places, you know, the rent is $4,500 a month and you're like, what am I paying for? Especially me, somebody from the South who's used to getting more bang for your buck. I'm like, I'm not paying these prices, but then also I have no choice. And where I do find things that are cheap and within my budget, I'm having a really long commute. So I'm having to sacrifice my sleep, and I already work night shift to have something within my budget, over having something that's right next to the hospital, but it's a lot more expensive. When I first got here, I was in Queens. I was in Long Island City. I was staying in a Sonder. I stayed there for about a week, and I thought it was going to be like other contracts, you know, stay for a week in a hotel or some other kind of accommodation, and I could find something quickly. Unfortunately, that was not the case. I was scrambling, and I realized it was just as expensive to stay in a hotel as it was to pay rent. So I said, I got to figure out something quickly, and I happened to find my current living situation. It is in a rent-stabilized building, a pre-war building. I lucked out when I found this place, and they didn't require a deposit. There was no broker's fee. Again, I really, really lucked out, because with New York, a lot of times you might be paying 10K plus before you even move into a place. And that's just for the first month. You're not even talking about, you know, month to month. The first month, it's going to be the most expensive, but I just didn't want to incur all those fees. Anywhere else I've been, you just pay your rent. Maybe you pay a deposit, you get your deposit back at the end. So I went into this ill-informed, and I would definitely recommend people researching the area where they're going, because again, I thought, oh, you know, I've lived in California, I've lived in Colorado, I've lived in Atlanta. It's no big deal. It's going to be the same. Boy, was I wrong. Another thing is transportation. Using the current example, I'm in New York, so I don't have my car. My car is sitting at home. And even just today, I was talking to one of my best friends that I met in the Bay Area, and I was like, maybe I should sell my car. You know, I don't know how long I'm going to be in New York. I'm kind of leaning towards making this my new home base. I don't know. But having a car, I mean, what's the purpose of having a car that just sits, you know, in another state and gets warmed once a week? There's no point in having that car just for, it's for novelty at this point, you know, for whenever I do decide to come home once or twice a month. Whereas somewhere like California, when I was in the Bay Area, I road tripped that car from Atlanta to Colorado. And then when I left that Colorado assignment, I drove from Colorado to Vegas and then from Vegas to the Bay Area. And I was out in the Bay Area for 6 months total. And then I did a cross-country road trip back to Atlanta. So you have to take into consideration, if you're not living somewhere with public transportation, you do need a car. Do you want to pay for a rental car? You have to, you know, calculate the cost of these things. I have friends that have shipped their car. Not everybody wants to be like me and be a frugal franny and drive their car everywhere. Well, granted, I think when I did that road trip back, gas prices were out of this world. So the cost of hotels and gas, I think it was just about the same price, if not maybe more expensive, to drive my car back than to ship it back. But then I also thought, I don't want somebody damaging my car. I wanted to do one last cross-country road trip, because I knew I was coming to a place that I wouldn't need my car. And even that, that's kind of partially true, because I ended up driving up to Baltimore and then had to drive back. So that was from north to south. But even still, I knew at some point in the near future, I was going to not have my car with me. So again, these are all things to consider. We already mentioned scheduling. Another thing, paperwork. There is so much paperwork that goes into travel nursing. I mean, getting your immunizations, printing out records. If they don't approve of a certain kind of blood test, you have to get titers. Even if you just got titers last year, you have to get them again. There is a lot of paperwork. There are a lot of unexpected costs that come up. You have to be ready to just get all this stuff done at the drop of a hat, emailing it multiple times to the same people, to new people. You have to be patient. Honestly, I think once the initial excitement of I've secured a contract wears off, the true frustration begins when you have to start doing this paperwork. That is my least favorite time, because if you're with the same agency, it's usually a seamless transition. However, you want to shop for the best rate. You want to, you know, make it worthwhile. And I encourage people to have multiple profiles with multiple agencies, shop around, because some places will have higher rates for the same hospital. So again, multiple profiles with multiple agencies. And this means you have to do paperwork multiple times. Deadlines are something that go hand in hand with paperwork. It gets really complicated if you are, for instance, a staff nurse trying to leave your job and go travel. Let's say you're working night shift. You are having to sacrifice sleep to go and get all this stuff done, and you have a very tight deadline. A lot of times when you sign these contracts, they want you to start in like 1 to 2 weeks. Something that comes to mind that has a very tight deadline, TB skin test. If they only accept the two-step skin test rather than the quantiferon B, that's something that is very time sensitive that you have to do, and you have to space that out. But if you only have 2 weeks, you don't have too much time to be spacing that out. Scheduling blood work, scheduling physical examinations, all things to consider. Not submitting these things on time can push back your start date. And again, I mentioned we're in a very saturated market, so pushing back your start date could put you at risk for them canceling the contract, because they might have Sally Sue who's ready to go at a moment's notice. Also, while we're on the topic of pushing start dates back, something that I've noticed a lot as the market gets more saturated and we're just stating that COVID is over, we're denying that COVID is still a thing. A lot of hospitals have moved away from weekly orientation to monthly orientation. And some, you might get lucky, they might have orientation every 2 weeks. And this is usually a case when they have new employee orientation. When I was a staff nurse, that's what they did. Every 2 weeks they had orientation. So if you miss a deadline, let's say you don't get your TB skin test in on time, you run the risk of waiting a whole nother month before you can start your assignment. Another thing is persistence. You have to be persistent. Stay on these people. Think to yourself that these recruiters, they have hundreds of people blowing up their phone, interested, trying to get to the money, just like you. So although they may be nice, they may be so caring, so loving, all this other stuff, you have to understand that they have 100 people to worry about. So it's not important to them unless it's important to you. You can't assume, oh, they're going to call me back. You got to follow up on things. You have to reach out. You have to assume that they forgot everything because, again, it's only important to you. It's only as important as you make it to them, I should say. We've already mentioned flexibility. You're going to be more flexible than an Olympic gymnast. Prime example that I'll insert here. When I finished up my crisis contract in the Bay Area, I worked from September to October. It was for 4 weeks. I came home around Halloween time. I was supposed to go and work my next Bay Area contract. I was only supposed to take 1 week off. What ended up happening was that I left one agency, went to another agency, submitted all my paperwork, did everything that I was supposed to do. Recruiter followed up, he followed up. Normally, you get your first day instructions the Friday before you're supposed to start. So I had my flight booked. I was set to leave that weekend, get to the Bay Area. My car was at the airport, the SFO, the San Francisco airport. So I was supposed to go back. What ended up happening was that the person who my paperwork was given to, it ended up on their desk. They ended up going on vacation and nobody had the key to this person's office. So I ended up going from 1 week off of work to now 3 weeks off of work. So as you can imagine, I had to reschedule my flight. I had to now pay for 3 weeks worth of parking for my car that was at the San Francisco airport. Thankfully, my agency reimbursed me, but that's something that I had to think outside of the box. Like, I'm not paying for this. I'm going to get my agency to reimburse this. And that was another 2 weeks worth of income that I had to miss out on. Thankfully, I managed my money well enough. I was at home. I don't have to pay rent. I don't have to pay for groceries. But I didn't really want to stay at home for that amount of time. So I went from a 1 week break to now a 3 week break. We've already mentioned sending repeated documents to the same person, sometimes to new people. We've already talked about loneliness. I did a whole podcast episode on loneliness. It's called Hey There, Lonely Girl. It's a couple episodes back. Miscommunication, again, we've already talked about miscommunication, dealing with multiple people. It's like constantly playing telephone. You will find yourself repeating yourself many, many times. People getting things lost in translation. Again, you have to be flexible. You have to be patient. We did talk about taking initiative. You have to do things with a sense of urgency because it is only important to you. Your recruiter has a million other things going on for a million other people, so you need to make it a priority to them. At the end of the day, nobody's going to spoon feed you as a travel nurse. That is the unfortunate reality. As a staff nurse, you have somebody constantly prompting you to do a variety of things, whereas as a travel nurse, you are your own boss. If you need certain time off, you need to put that in your pre-requested time off. If you want block scheduling, or if you don't want to work weekends, or if you need to know what kind of uniform, you need to ask that ahead of time because maybe you can get reimbursed for the uniform, but nobody's going to give you this nice, neat packet. A good example of this is when I was in Baltimore days before I was supposed to start my assignment, my recruiter said, oh yeah, just to let you know, your uniform color is navy. Thankfully, I had asked during the interview what was the scrub color, and I got that and I had time to order it. But imagine you're in a foreign place, you don't have an established mailbox, and they're telling you you need to wear navy and you're working 4 days a week. You're going to be scrambling looking for where can I find navy scrubs. And I don't just wear any scrubs. I know it's bougie, but I want to prepare ahead of time. I also like to order about 2 weeks worth of scrubs so I don't have to do laundry for at least 2 weeks, because if I'm staying in a hotel and there's no guarantee on where I'm going to be living, then at least I don't have to worry about going to a laundromat every single week because I only have one, two, 3 pairs of scrubs. There are a lot of things that you have to take initiative with. With this current travel assignment, I had to set up all my lab exams. They did not give me any resources on how to set up lab exams. Everything. I had to set up everything. And then when it was all said and done, they said, okay, now you need to submit your receipts to get reimbursed. And if you don't do that, you're not going to get your money back. So now you not only had to set up all these appointments, now you have to keep track of all of these receipts so that you can get your money back on your first paycheck. As I mentioned at the very beginning of this episode, you're going into unknown territory and they're expecting you to be a resource. They are critically understaffed and they might not have the resources that you need. You might not even have the supplies needed to do your job, but they are expecting you to come in there and help them out, lend a helping hand, and be a resource and not a liability. Again, these are all things to consider. This is not an episode to discourage you and tell you don't become a travel nurse, but I think that, again, a lot of people glamorize, oh, get into the bag, I'm gonna buy a G-Wagon and I'm gonna buy this designer bag and I'm going on a vacation to this all-inclusive resort and I drop 10 bands on this. I think that we do a great disservice to a lot of people in the profession by only highlighting the positives and nobody talks about the nitty-gritty thing. So I hope that this does help somebody. Again, this is not to deter you, it's just to be honest with you, because I know I was not expecting all of this when I became a travel nurse. So that's all that I have for you guys today. Definitely reach out if you guys have any questions on this topic or if there's something you'd like me to cover in an upcoming episode. As always, you guys can find me on Instagram or TikTok at A Girl Named Ken, K-E-N-N. You can find me on my blog at www.agirlnamedken.com. And you can find me on YouTube at Nkenna Rose, N-K-E-N-N-A, Rose like the flower. Yeah, that's it. That's all my social media. As always, it's time to go to bed.